support each other?
I'm a big believer in art being something that a community puts together for itself without help from or intervention by government. In general, I tend to feel that government getting involved in any kind of aesthetic decision-making is a bad idea. So I'm a big fan of DIY, and I'm a big fan of local businesses showing support for the local art community.
And there's lots of art coming out of the Western Front.
Excuse me, because I'm going to have to go sell books again.
Go ahead. Into the Western Front. Was Sonorian Tearing on CITR 101.9 FM. This is the end of the Arts Report this week, so tune in again next week. I'm leaving you with Julie from Audio Text, and an apology to Ashley Ball from Heyotion, that I totally mispronounced her last name. So Ashley Ball and Heyotion will be performing tomorrow night at the Chan Center. You should check it out. And if you're not going there, check out Ra Ra from Regina with Red Cedar and Yukon Blonde at the Wise Hall. Doors are at 8. All right, that's it for me from the Arts Report. Have a great weekend.
Now's the time for Age of Humans. Care for what can be done for yourself.
Promoting their latest album in the ever-expanding universe, the Biltmore Cabaret and the Georgia Strait present Canadian band The Most Serene Republic with Seattle's Grand Archives. They're playing the Biltmore Cabaret on Saturday, September 26th. Doors at 7, show at 8:30. Tickets are on sale now.
What happens when you mix this? With this. You get the slew. Kid Koala and Dynamite D with the former rhythm section of Wolfmother, featuring drums, bass, keys, and the DJs working across a truly excessive 6 turntables. The set is 70 minutes of raw guitar cuts and heavy beats. We can guarantee that you will never have heard anything quite like this, and also that you are unlikely to again. It's a one-off tour, so when it stops in your town, you'll either be there or you'll have missed it forever. The Slew, September 23rd, with special guest with Adira Amran at the Commodore Ballroom. Brash, loud, and defiantly turned up to 11. The Slew Tour is coming to Vancouver. Don't miss it.
From Pear Tree Poems by Roy Kiyuka. Since you and I forsook the rites of marriage, intentionally without facing up to the signals of mutual disenchantment, we found ourselves sidestepping each other's nakedness to fall asleep in a heap of mired feelings till the early bird traffic on Prior Street summoned us to another good morning, did you sleep well, breakfast on the run. There's a lady with a champagne voice on co-op radio singing the old after midnight blues, and whoops, there's that old heartache again. What I want to know is how come you with your bright gists and me with my pointed beard didn't make the perfect match? How come we ended up playing that old deaf and dumb game when it was just plain as this prose that the pear tree's forked branches foretold the truth? Since you left, I've been taking a hot water bottle to bed. How about you with your tepid toes? Listening to Audio Text on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is JC Peters. You're listening to Audio Text. This is your Canadian writing show. Today I get a whole hour, which is kind of nice. Today's show is going to be something of a sequel to last week's show. I played a little bit of poetry and an interview by Peter Yeager, and I'm going to be giving you guys a little bit more of that stuff. And I'm also going to be coming back to the Vancouver Poetry Slam Finals, which happened last Monday. And I'm going to be playing some of the amazing, amazing poetry that went down that night as well. So if you liked what you heard last week, today you just get a little bit more. So it's going to be sweet from now till about 7 p.m. But before we get to all of that juice, the juicy part is what I like to call it when we get to the poetry and the writing, a few listings for various things going on for today, September 16th, 2009, Wednesday evening. Yesterday was my friend Christina Markham's birthday, so I thought I would say something like that about that for her. I was going to pick poetry based on her preferences, but all I can remember that she really liked was Leonard Cohen, and I don't have Leonard Cohen's book right now. So, Christina, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I'll be reading more Roy Kiyuka, which I think you would like anyway. So, happening tonight, Wednesday the 16th, there's a show called The Gist, starting at 8 p.m. at the Anza Club, which is going to be featuring four storytellers, Ivan Coyote, Damon Schritter, Dan Mangan, and Brendan McLeod. So they're all storytellers of different types. You probably know Dan Mangan already. He's also a musician. So the show should be really good. 8 p.m., the Anza Club. It's $15. It's probably going to sell out. I would say get there early, but it's going to be a really good show. And never fear, I'm going to be recording it, so hopefully I'll be able to have some excerpts to play for you in future shows as well. Tomorrow is Thursday, September 17th. Mandy Moore and Leanne Prain are going to be launching their new book, Yarn Bombing, The Art of Crochet and Knit Graffiti, at Three Bags Full, which is 4458 Main Street at 5:30 p.m. That's a free event, so if you're interested in books and knitting, you can check out more information at www.threebagsfull.ca. Also, tomorrow evening, September 17th, Ian Rankin is going to be at the St. Andrew's Wesley Church, which is 1022 Nelson. It's a $25 event. He's the creator of the Rebus series, and he's going to be talking about his new novel, The Complaints. And that's going to be at 7:30 p.m. You can check out more information about that at www.writersfest.bc.ca. Friday, September 18th at 7 p.m., author Ashok Mathur, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, launches his new book, A Little Distillery in Naugong, a historical novel that traces the lives of three generations of a Parsi family in India. And that's at the Century Restaurant and Bar, 432 Richard Street. Also Friday, September 18th, Barbara Adler, who you have probably heard before on this show if you've been listening, is going to be doing another solo show at Café du Soleil. So it's going to be full of hilarious stories about horseback riding and lots of songs on the accordion, which is her specialty. It's a $5 to $7 event, sliding scale. Starting at 9 p.m., Café du Soleil is at Commercial Drive and 5th. There's a lot going on this week. Sometimes I don't have much to say, and nowadays it seems like I'm taking up my whole show talking about listings. So I hope it's useful for you guys. Saturday, September 19th, the launch of the Best of Van Slam CD is happening at the Rhizome Cafe, which is 317 Broadway East at Kingsway. $8 to $12 cover includes a Vancouver Poetry Slam CD. You've heard a bit from that, too. I have it. Lots of the performers on the CD will be there as well, so it should be a pretty exciting night for spoken word poetry. That'll be a really fun event at the Rhizome Saturday. Monday, September 21st, emerging poets Daniela Elza, Peter Marin, Al Rempel, and Anjana Yangwei are going to be reading from four poets, an anthology of emerging BC poets. So that's at the Peter Kay Room at the Vancouver Public Library, 7:30 p.m., and that's a free event. Same time, same place, except in the Alice McKay Room, Ivan E. Coyote is going to be sharing her work also for a free event. So if you can't make it tonight and you want to hear more of Ivan Coyote, who's a brilliant storyteller, she's going to still be here on Monday, so you have another chance to see her. Also Monday, as always, it's the Vancouver Poetry Slam, a regular slam featuring Lauren Zuniga. So lots to check out this week. Hopefully you'll go and see some of these things and get a live sense of the kinds of things that I play for you on the show. So that being said, moving right along. So as I said, last week I played an interview with Peter Yeager, who is a really interesting poet. A lot of the time he writes not so much the kind of poetry that you would hear at a Vancouver Poetry Slam. It's not so much about feelings, it's about constraints. So he'll take things from pop culture based on a certain constraint, like in one of the pieces I'm going to be playing for you, there has to be someone's name in each of the sentences or something like that. I was reading from Rapid Eye Movement, which is a piece about dreams as well, last week. So it's a sort of a different approach, and I think it's nice on the show to be able to play some very emotive, performative kind of spoken word poetry, as well as some more sort of intellectually focused page poetry that is a completely different experience to hear out loud. And I got to go see Peter Reed at the Kootenai School of Writing, one of their writers' events, and that was a really great thing. So I was only able to play 2 minutes or so of what I had recorded last week, and we have a little more time today. So I'm going to be playing you a piece called The Persons, which I really enjoyed. I thought that it was a really interesting piece. So this is Peter Yeager reading The Persons.
This is something new I've been working on while I've been here. I started just before I came here. And it's intended to eventually be a very, very long kind of telephone book for this piece. It's going to be a long process if I can keep interest in it. And basically it's... I sort of felt like instead of writing a poem that was concerned with tensions between sentences and lines and, you know, imagery and different discourses and whatnot, that I would just observe people and very simply note down one sentence for each person. Or not only observe, but also read, take sentences out of journals, newspapers, journals, books, etc. And the constraint here is that every sentence has to begin with a proper name. So it could just influence the form, really. But I find it builds up in an interesting way because of the kind of social engagement of people. It's called The Persons. I'll read a few pages of it. Alaric observes, Fred argued that everything changed in 1959. Alan wears spotted cotton. Ed simply photographed gas stations from Oklahoma to California. Stevens has an easy boyish giggle. Robinson left. Annie ran a fast time to win the women's overall title. Muriel bought the farm. Nadim is afraid of the Taliban's return. Jose asserted that Kappa staged his famous photo. Belgard arrived carrying a feather. Ariel wears brown wool. Mr. Heath said he believed the police would follow his orders on tasers. Bruce called all the creative writing teachers hacks. Mitch died of AIDS. Batstone thinks that their ideas took root 1,000 years ago on opposite sides of the same valley. Lalita lived in an ashram for several years. Jack listens to classic rock. Andy works at Random House. Mark emigrated to Australia. Nurit lives in Tel Aviv. Johan played the accordion. Susan announced the move. Bill strides manfully to the curry house. Bob chanted. Arthur hates to sound like a Don Cherry retread. Tracy will teach children aged 8 to 12. Trina drinks the boiled water from her vegetables, claiming it is actually better than tap water. Ujjal said the federal government could order the recommendations be enacted with the stroke of a pen. Bob died in hospital. Sarah is another victim of political inactivity. Michael thinks it's getting more attention in the media now. Brad was top batter. Bird's test group was provided with normal cardiac treatment along with receiving thoughts of healing energy or prayer sent by the volunteers, while the control group received only traditional health care for their condition. Colleen smokes. Cameron led the way with another first place. Piers wears maroon cotton. Campbell said BC's shift to harmonized tax will create pressure on the remaining provinces. Caroline wears brown nylon. Cedric was an executive in South Africa before moving to Toronto with his Canadian wife. Sackville rode horses on public bridle roads. Charles says okay. Penelope wears red wool. Christian runs with it relentlessly. Cleo dyed her hair white, then magenta. Victor planted more than anyone else. Kenneth is boring. Clint sniped at snapshots. Creeley told me how he buried dead persons every day. Conrad seemed afraid of me. Stephen calculated that the tax cut would be visible, appreciated, and therefore politically rewarding. Daryl often reports the bad news when it happens, but also likes to report the positive. Iggy, a likable guy, used to smear peanut butter on his chest before diving into the crowd, but now he sells car insurance. Dave acts as Henry's stand-in. Penelope stars in her fifth film directed by Pedro. Davies questions whether the pub is a dangerous and potentially immoral establishment that should never be allowed in an area containing residential homes or a tightly knit focal point known for its contributions to local charities. West remains unorganized. Pablo shifted. Debbie checks out the donated garden trellis. John preached the gospel. Rob heals with sound. Steve climbs cliffs. Steve reconfigured reference on Grey Wednesday. Bethan commissioned a painting. Mark bought a huge house on a hill overlooking the bay. Naomi lives near King's Cross, although she grew up the daughter of a missionary doctor in Iran. Napoleon sat for Dominique. Dennis blew his high school graduation speech by blurting out that he loves head cheerleader Beth. Donna told us that we are all already cyborgs. Dorian abandoned a successful medical practice to withdraw from the lifestyle of mainstream America. David says he has been suspended from the convention under allegations of vote buying. Clifford pleaded guilty to manslaughter. Johnson Sirleaf is trying to rebuild Liberia. Sullivan believes that it will take time, commitment, and lots of volunteers to undo the untruths. Les created one of the first solid body electric guitars in 1941. Dr. Green hurt her shoulders working at the computer. Mrs. Townsend bought some British Petroleum. Edward supported his friend Daniel, who holds both Israeli and Palestinian passports, when the latter was attacked in Israel for playing the music of an anti-Semite, Richard Weisberger. Wallace attended a wedding. Edwina said the numbers too quickly for me to catch. Fogg said the price was £2.15. Joe's sick of Christmas carols and it's only November 5th. Glenn wears pink cotton. Frank is downsizing his large collection of model airplanes. Doug wears no clothes in the woods. Frattini said the prostitute who taped the Prime Minister's remarks is on the payroll of journalists. Gavin wears navy blue. Jobson offered us coffee. Jeff won by a comfortable margin. Geraldine wears black blue. Frank bought chips. Fred bought chips. Han received notice. Bob sang, "Thanks for the memories," his signature song from entertaining U.S. troops overseas for nearly half a century. Harry wears black cotton. Herbie once worked in nuclear reactors. Herbie read the Bible to me. Herbie tried to hold my hand. Kennedy said, "We choose to go to the moon." I'm meeting Jeff at the Wallace Berman Show. Jimmy plays air guitar at his home as he listens to old Link Wray and Muddy Waters singles. Robert wears white cotton. Jackson looked at light. Jay ate mushrooms. Melanie wears a gray jacket and matching trousers with boots. Sheena has the trait of getting the job done, yet her creativity is always niggling at the back of her mind. Sid read that the gods are angry volcanoes. Jessica likes that it is a spirit-driven gift of the heart. Patty's life experiences have provided her with proof of life after life. Jim ripped a line drive to left field during a big slow pitch tournament. Jill hasn't exactly totally slacked off all day yet. Laura thanks us all and asks for questions. Telotima read Hegel when she was 12. Maurizio's mother was abducted when she was a young girl. Tim sometimes resorts to funny metaphors. Rose, who was 12 weeks pregnant, said that in light of a fatality in a very similar crash last year, something has to be done. Mia sings and smiles in the morning. Miss Wheelwright stepped away into first class. Sandy wears dark gray wool. Gordon reprimanded the celebrities. Kate wears black wool. Paul first saw one in a magazine a couple of years ago. Mr. Abdel Razik said, I want to live my life like a normal person, like a normal Canadian. Mr. and Mrs. Smith did not realize just how happy they could be. Susan has an admin query. George will start with a cappuccino. Quentin would like to stop making movies and write novels instead. Jackson left about $400 million in debts. Mr. Jones has seen Darth Vader and Legoland and Bob Dylan. Mrs. McFarlane ate the cookies. Johan reads, Paul wears black denim. Niall wears red nylon, or at least plastic of some kind, of polyester, in any case red. Kevin wears red felt. Nikki let out a little huff. Kavanaugh had no explanation for the funding cut. Thank you all very, very much.
Robots need love too.
This is Dan Mangan, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 in Vancouver and surrounding university areas.
They want to be loved by robots, need love too. They want to be loved by you.
So that was Peter Yeager reading from a piece that he hasn't even published yet. He's just working on it now. It's called The Persons. And it's nice because I don't usually get the chance to play such kind of long pieces, but I think especially with something like that, if you really listen, you can kind of stop and get a bit hypnotized in listening to what's going on with all of these different people. And you also don't often hear personal names, proper names in poetry very often, because of course you don't know who these people are. But I find that piece manages to be about strangers, but also so intimate in a way too, because it seems to be telling these very short stories of moments in people's lives that could be people that you know, and some of them are celebrities. Iggy Pop was in there, for example, but some of them aren't, and I find that just a really fascinating thing to kind of really sit down and just listen to and let yourself get carried away in this kind of wave of people that you don't know but could be your closest friends as easily, you know. So I wanted to share that with you guys. And just as a completely different contrast to the kind of get your emotions out in 3 minutes kind of thrust of the Vancouver Poetry Slam, and that style that is often what I play on this show on audio text here on CITR. So I'm going to play next one more piece from Peter Yeager, significantly shorter, but on the same kind of bent, I guess. It's called The Martyrologies, and it's kind of a similar one but different. It's collected from different stories of martyrs. So it's just one more minute of Peter Yeager, and then we'll move on to contrasting it with the spoken word stuff that I've got for you today. So this is Peter Yeager once again.
So I took sentences out of The Martyrologies, purely the sentence where the saint died, only that, because they're known, they're martyrs because they're martyrs because of their death. So their whole identity is their non-identity. He admitted that this was so, and after a short imprisonment, he was beheaded. He was broken limb by limb. She was burned to death on an islet in the river, whereupon they were buried alive. But eventually she died from her sufferings. For this insubordination they were twice decimated. She was executed by being stabbed in the throat, a common Roman form of execution. He was himself arrested and put to death among supernatural happenings. In a drunken fury, they set on him, pelting him with bones, and although one of them tried to save him, he was killed by a blow on the head with an axe. After doing all he could to safeguard his flock, he submitted to death. They shot him down and flung his body into his burning church. They were arrested as apostles and beheaded. She refused to renounce her faith, whereupon her father was ordered himself to put her to death. At length she was tied in a net and thrown to a bull, which gored her to death. When they broke in on her, she was sitting quietly at a desk reading. And it goes on for, you know, 10 pages.
So that was Peter Yeager. And if you're interested in Peter, just check him out online. You can get a lot of his books on the internet. And he was reading at the Kootenai School of Writing reading series. And if you'd like to go and check out more of those, their events listings are pretty good on their website, which is kswnet.org. So please do check that out. So for the next half of the show, I'm going to be playing some recordings from the Vancouver Poetry Slam Finals, which was last Monday. And it is the poets who win during the summer season. It's kind of like hockey. You sort of get, in these seasons, you get to go on to the finals and stuff like that. And then whoever wins the finals goes on to something else. So it was basically the 10 sort of theoretically best poets from the season competing to see who would go down to Berkeley to represent Vancouver in the individual World Poetry Slam down there. So might as well start off with the winner of the evening, Zacchaeus Jackson. This was his 2-minute piece.
And I would call all the world's water traitor for the way her body brought the traitors of fur, of flesh, of Black Hills gold, holding butterfly nets, wove of heartstrings so cold they were able to freeze, and then capture my nation's breezes, kidnap the Blackfoot Cattapale, whitewash her way through the half
Zacchaeus Jackson, the winner of the Vancouver Poetry Slam Finals. He's going to be going down to Berkeley to represent us very soon, so congratulations to him. He did a great job that night. And next up I'm going to play for you, actually he happens to be the second place winner. Duncan Shields is also a really beautiful poet, and he had this one piece that just kind of hypnotized everyone in the crowd. It was really interesting to watch. It's a pretty rowdy kind of crowd at Café du Soleil. They're all drinking and shouting and stuff, and they all just kind of went quiet and just fell in love with this guy. So I'm going to play that piece for you right now. This is Duncan Shields.
I think that I shall never see a poem as lovely as you. Your bark is as lovely as your bite. If every day is a season, then let every dusk be an autumn, and let you lose your leaves in front of me. And if beneath your absent leaves you are evergreen and blushing to me and only me, then that's okay. I accept the contradiction that you bring. I have water ski crashed into a different life that I did not expect, and I'm infinitely grateful. was sick of writing one-way letters. A wolf pack of jean jackets and forgetful sparrows made clothes for me and called me late at night. Numbers stamped with only call when drunk / nicotine quick through my phone. I became a postcard. Love doesn't arrive on a train station hello from people you recognize. It's a cape that swishes in the darkness when you're trying to turn the page. The right needle to bring the song out of the valleys is flying through you 20 times a second, stitching moments in front of you and turning your past into a tale you use for balance. The birds and the bees come in and make a hive out of drooling moments for humans to put in greeting cards and hope for in mirrors. A crinkling at the side of your eye, I'm yours. Promises go unregarded, unimportant, fleeting and paper plain as a weather report for next year. This is the love-swept shore of your bangs, the karate kicks of your eyelashes, and the waves of your laughter. When I'm not touching you, it feels like the circuit is broken. Be it hips, lips, or fingertips, that touch warms it up to audible and makes the reasons plain. The times I'm around you are already so valuable. I'm a man that knows the face of loss, regret, and boredom. I know the bad decisions, the dreary sentences of days without end, the impending aimlessness of just another day on the fire. You are a unicorn on the Starship Enterprise. Let's give our bad judgment a head start. Let's make our bodies into flint and spark fires to give love a chance to see in the dark. Let's make prank calls to our past. Let's get the future good and drunk and cheat at cards until we're all naked in a dirty motel room laughing. Let me spend a little time coloring inside your lines. I'm burning my flight plan with one hand and reaching for you with the other. My days have become dreams, and between the dreams I have at night that are made more vibrant by the fact that you are sleeping beside me. You have taken my present, both sleeping and awake, and made it better. Not to overshare the obvious, but there are times when I'm lost in this unexpected goodness, this lack of drama, this windfall oasis of peace. I feel parts of me that I didn't even realize were tense start to uncurl, daring the sun. Pieces of me long since healed, but still scared, peeking between their fingers at what they thought was a horror movie. I notice glacial chapters tick over in the odometer of my chest. This is springtime finally catching me in a pillow fight. The first time we met, our 75-year-old selves recognized each other, and all that was left was the talking and the stumbling as our younger selves, these bodies here, were coaxed towards that older couple. You don't tan, but the sun makes the freckles come out across your back like stars. You are my pale night sky. This bed, corner to corner, holds more opportunities for car crashes and kite flying than our imaginations can possibly exploit, except through years of delicious trial and error. You are Michelangelo's right hand trembling before beginning, and I am one hopeful wish, daring myself to make the right moves. You're turning the strings of my heart into an orchestra. I want to swim forever in the high tide line of your hips. You're reminding me that there is such a thing as a safe place. I'm thrilled I make you happy. Let's go forward, hands in hands, like kids at a playground. Let's skip until we break a record.
You have wandered into the folk oasis. Welcome to it.
Stop the world and let me on.
You are indeed listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I've been trying to keep my mouth shut, baby. I've been trying to change my dark ways, maybe.
Yes, 8 to 10 p.m. every Wednesday night. It's me, Val, hosting 2 hours of eclectic roots music.
I went downstairs to hear the sound. Broken lean and singing song and night.
Folk Oasis.
All right, so quick little update, this little CITR live in the air update. Anita B is going to be starting up Sam Squanch's Hideaway at 6:45. So she's going to be on the air in just 10 or 15 minutes or so. So keep your ears open for that. In the meantime, a little more poetry from another one of the finalists who were performing on Monday at the Vancouver Poetry Slam, Johnny McRae.
You onceless believe in developing nations. Canadian bacon, calling it program.
sky for supernatural debt relief.
Well, your lightning fast hot rods don't do it for me. You see, I prefer water to acid and air that is clean. Oh, you say, but we're going green. This hot rod's a hybrid. It's powered by steam. Hey, you got the hot air. That much is plain. But I can smell bullshit and I'm choking on methane. Which is why I pass out and slip into dreams where I meet the Lorax who speaks thus to me.
That was Johnny McRae. Up next, Fernando Aguero.
This is called David Suzuki Hates This Poem. This poem will not save the world. This poem won't even try. This poem will not change your life. This poem is not a morally uplifting message engraved on a shoehorn. If anything, this poem is the fine print on the tip of a nuclear warhead. This poem babysits your children and lets them play with plastic bags on the freeway. This poem is the type of poem mother warned you about. This poem will make the wrong kind of friends. This poem will be full of shit. You won't be any smarter after hearing this poem. This poem won't say what you want to hear. Don't presume that you need to hear it. This poem is the empty calories of a fuck you pie. There will be no forethought on how relevant this poem is in the grand scheme of the literary world. That is not the job of this poem or this poet. This poem will be rejected by the Paris Review. This poem will get over it. This poem sells arms to the pine beetle. This poem shot a tree just to watch it die. As it shot the middle finger through the ozone. This poem is the reason the polar ice caps are melting. This poem lives on a diet of eagle claws and black bear testicles. And drives an SUV. David Suzuki hates this poem. Most likely this poem will have been written during a bowel movement in the bathroom of a Taco Del Mar. This poem will make fun of itself. Make fun of you. Make fun of the sunset. Make fun of God, the devil, and your grandmother's wooden vagina collection. This poem is Mahatma Gandhi masturbating in hell. This poem doesn't discriminate when it comes to getting a cheap laugh. This poem isn't as bad as it could be. This poem sets off metal detectors in airports. This poem is a horny drunk parolee feeling up a Catholic schoolgirl in a halfway house. This poem doesn't blame the government, but for some reason the government blames this poem. This poem has no color, no race, no social ranking. This poem doesn't wear dreadlocks or a beret. The tax man will get nothing out of this poem. This poem is a man hating, bitter, angry vegan with a gag on morphine. This poem may have offended some people with that last line. This poem says, good. This poem will take up approximately 3 minutes of your life and give back nothing in return. At the same time, it spits in your eye.
That was Fernando Reguero. So yes, you've just been listening to a few of the pieces from the finals night at the Vancouver Poetry Slam. So I hope you enjoyed that stuff and the contrast with what Peter was doing, which is a totally different world of poetry. And so, you know, maybe if you think that you don't like poetry, or you really do, you know that there's a completely opposite side. That you can kind of see that there's poetry is very different on different sides, and some of it might speak to you and some of it might not, but it's not poetry's fault. People sometimes think it's poetry's fault, but there's something out there for everyone. So just to end off the show, I wanted to come back to reading a little bit from Roy Kiyuka's long poem. It's a serial poem, sort of a serial poem called Pear Tree Poems, and I read this a long, long time ago on my old show in Montreal, and I read a lot of poetry, but not all of it really sticks with me, and for some reason this piece just, I find it really lovely and quiet, and it really stuck in my brain for a long time, so it's going to be a pleasure for me to be able to read a little bit more of it, so I hope that you enjoy it as well. And just as a side note, I'm reading from the new long poem anthology, the second edition by Sharon, edited by Sharon Thiessen, and it's published by Talon Books, so this is Roy Kiyuka. If I had known the number of hours I would find myself mute, till the early morning wind off the tip of Ballantyne Pier gently stirred every leaf, and all of a sudden these words, these votaries of incandescence, and all the awakened birds startle, the incipient breath of a small poem. If I had known it would take 56 summers to divine a plain song, I would, given another spin of the wheel, chant each newborn syllable aloft, and watch it haunt the combustible air. In this way, the felicitous way of nouns and their attendant verbs, a small pear made its compact with the sun to become utterly rotund. I breast an ancient syntax heaped up long before speech bore fruit, trilled an orange-crested pear tree bird before heading south. How to qualify a pear tree without pointing at the sky? I lean out of the study window to sniff the clear October night. There's 1, 2, 3 half-bitten pears hanging in midair. Under skeletal branches, a motley of bruised pears toll the end of another summer, another fall, flagrant heat, heart and all. Up in the air or down on the ground, all creatures, large and small, begin by biting the air these bitten pears bear the flesh of. Who knows how long this small psalm to an old pear tree, and your preserved pears will sing into the so-called future. On this, the last Friday in the month of August, I am ravaged by its gist of autumnal silences and everything it unconceals. What have I been given to accomplish, borrow something dark, barely apprehensible from, it must be its original shadow. Planted in the rainforest of my image of a specific nation, the ohm of primal silences, blew a pear tree the size of a dwarf's fist, into the forebodings of a sentence which, believe it or not, flowered into this bitten flesh, this beak of mirth. P.S. caught a glimpse of Jim, the ace mechanic of our alley, biting into a ripe pear while over his head a bunch of starlings and a robin you know have awful belly aches. Ask a fallen pear about winter omens. Since we stood on the back porch, wondering if the old pear tree would survive another winter, I've been sitting here where you used to sit, writing its diurnal virtues down on paper, and every time I look up, I can see how it prevailed over our solicitudes by lofting yet another plangent spring. With or without you, I am clearly intent upon sharing its equinoctial visions, riddled by an odd phosphorescence. The old pear tree and I sit quietly divining the lattices of a frugal winter night. In my book of sacred nomenclature, the pear tree bespeaks all the unimpeachable days we savored under its green umbrella. Pears kissed into existence by the sun will nourish compost and bury every lover. Given its seasonal epiphanies, I would be a fool indeed if I didn't turn inside its ring of seasons and, yes, my adamant self alive. So that was a short excerpt from Roy Kiyuka's Pear Poems. So today you got to hear some readings by a page poet, a reading here in the studio by a page poet, and a bunch of spoken word poets. So you can decide for yourself what you liked and why. Hopefully it was a little bit of food for thought. So thanks so much for listening once again to Audio Text right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I will be back next Wednesday. Thanks for listening.